kind of feel we should remind people of how to get in touch
with us.
Well,
it's always handy. If you're a new listener...
New listener, welcome to the show.
Always welcome.
Wrong location, right result.
That's it. Right, we're coming up to 8 o'clock. You're at the right location. It's 5 Live, Sunday breakfast.
The voice of the UK.
And the home of the Premier League.
This is BBC Radio 5 Live.
And the headlines, the death of the leader of Hezbollah has been described as a historic turning point by Israel's Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. Hassan Nasrallah was killed in an Israeli airstrike on his group's headquarters in the Lebanese capital, Beirut. Mr. Netanyahu said the killing was evidence his country was winning its fight against its enemies.
We settled the score with the one responsible for the murder of countless Israelis and many citizens of other countries, including hundreds of Americans and dozens of French. Nasrallah's elimination is an essential condition to achieve the goals we have set.
Ayatollah Khamenei has declared 5 days of mourning in Iran, which backs Hezbollah. Cross-border fire between Israel and Hezbollah continues, with Israel saying it's hit dozens of targets. Lebanese media say at least 15 people were killed in the overnight strikes. Earlier we spoke to the former BBC Middle East correspondent Jim Muir, who is in West Beirut.
What we have had is a wave of displaced people because Israel has been hitting the southern suburbs, very densely populated. A lot of people have fled from there and, of course, from the south of the country and the east as well. So they've converged on relatively safe places like here. So our whole area is swamped with people looking for somewhere to stay, some of them sleeping out.
The MP, Rosie Duffield, has told the BBC that Sir Keir Starmer's team cares more about greed and power than about making a difference. She's resigned from the Labour Party and will now sit as an independent MP.
We all had our faith in Keir Starmer and a Labour government, and I feel that voters and activists and MPs are being completely laughed at and completely taken for granted.
She's criticised the Prime Minister for accepting tens of thousands of pounds worth of gifts from donors. Downing Street hasn't responded.
The Conservatives' annual conference starts in Birmingham today, where the focus will be on the party leadership contest. The four candidates will all use the conference to argue their case before two more are voted out of the race.
SpaceX has launched its mission to bring back two astronauts stranded on the International Space Station since June. The Dragon capsule lifted off from Cape Canaveral in Florida last night. Sunny Williams and Butch Wilmore's mission was meant to last just 8 days.
And hundreds of people in the hometown of Sam Wellington, who died after the Great North Run, have pledged to run or walk 2.1 miles in his memory. It is the distance the 29-year-old from Northumberland had to complete when he collapsed. The event will begin in Newbiggin by the Sea at 11 o'clock. If you are taking part in that, then the very best of luck. That sounds an absolutely fantastic thing to be doing in Sam's memory. Just on fishing.
Yes, we talked about this because Phil Foden apparently is a very keen angler.
He loves it. And there is a picture in the paper of him with an absolutely huge carp.
He's got all the kit as well, with his name on it.
Absolute whopper. Right. In fact, when he was on this...
Phil Foden carp.
Yeah. It's almost as big as him. He was on a fishing vlog, a popular one on YouTube, called Spooner's Fishing Vlog. And they went on a 3-day trip, apparently, and he was thrilled to score an angling goal by landing a 28-pound carp. He's always loved it. So we were simply asking, you know, just distill it. Why is it a fantastic thing for you? And we've had some brilliant texts, actually. We really like them. Go on, Ellie, you've got one.
Yeah, this one is from Seb in Bath. He says, I fish at Blagden and Chew Valley Lake near Bristol. We have a youth development pathway for kids, teaching young people fly fishing. It's actually an excuse to be there. Get youngsters out there too. Fresh air and mental well-being. Fantastic.
Mm-hmm. Because it's... I don't feel like we... There used to be a fishing programme on 5 Live back in the day, didn't there? A long time ago.
Do you remember what it was called?
It
was called Dirty Tackle.
That's right. That's a great name.
It's a great name, isn't it?
Was it Nick Hancock who did it?
I think he might have done it for a bit, actually.
It was a long time ago.
I think Nick did a fishing show.
Given it's the biggest participation sport, we don't talk about it that much, do we? That's why I was sort of half tempted into it today. Ian in Droitwich, there is fishing. and there is fishing. I hooked a blue marlin while fishing off Walker's Cay, Bahamas. Around £1,000, this fish hit my bait at 40 miles an hour and took off for about half a mile before I was able to start reeling it in.
Oh, my word. That's serious.
After a three-hour fight, the fish broke free and left me totally shattered.
40-mile-an-hour fish?
Marlin 1, Ian from Droitwich 0. Put that into your scores, James. Yeah.
And Peter from Cambridgeshire, this sounds a little bit more meditative and gentle. We fish the tidal section of the River Great Ouse between the locks at Brownhill Staunch and the Old West River in Cambridgeshire. The water flows all the way into the Norfolk Washes from here. So we're joined by resident seals, otters and kingfishers and more,
mm-hmm,
I think.
Yeah.
But not the family. Unfortunately, it is in flood right now. Says Peter. But yeah, no, that sounds great. That
That's good. So 85058, these are very good. If you, if you're an angler, if you go and do it, distill it. Why? Tell us where you fish. Tell us your name. 85058, simple. Here's James.
It's great stuff, isn't it? Maybe the man who is potentially going to be stealing more headlines than Phil Foden, Cole Palmer, once again, was just sensational, wasn't he, yesterday? He broke another record, the first player to score four goals in the first half of a Premier League match. Chelsea beat Brighton 4-2 yesterday. They're fourth in the table. It's Liverpool who lead the way in the early stages of the season. They seized advantage of Manchester City dropping points to go top of the Premier League after a 2-1 win over Wolves at Molineux. Arsenal level on points with City, one back of Arne Slot side, courtesy of a late win over Leicester. Rangers will look to try and narrow that gap once again on the Scottish Premiership leader Celtic. They face Hibernian at lunchtime. Their old firm rivals just keep winning. They beat St Johnstone 6-0 away yesterday. Saracens beat Sale 45-26. It's their second win of the season. They're top of the Premiership. Wins two for Quins and Saints. And John Higgins will face Mark Selby in the final of Snooker's British Open in Cheltenham today. And Higgins will move back into the top 16 regardless of the outcome of the final. Selby beat Mark Allen 6-3 in the semi yesterday. So much more sport to talk about this Sunday morning here on 5 Live.
BBC Radio 5 Live, the voice of the UK.
On digital radio.
On BBC Sounds.
And ask your smart speaker
to play BBC Radio 5 Live.
Sunday Breakfast.
With Eleanor Oldroyd and Chris Warburton.
Yes, and among those sporting themes that we're going to be pursuing that James has just mentioned, we'll look ahead to the big game in the Premier League this afternoon, Manchester United against Spurs. Do that in the next half hour. Boxing as well last night. Rhiannon Dixon was beaten by Terry Harper, all British fight. And so Terry Harper now three-weight world champion. So that's quite something for her. And also I watched Strictly, the first time I actually sat down and did a Strictly marathon last night, because it's all, you know, there's so many people in it at this stage. Chris McCausland, people have been talking about him a lot. Mm-hmm. His the relationship that he has with Diane Boswell is quite remarkable, actually, because he's blind, and so she is having to, she can't show him what to do, so she's having to describe it all verbally. And we're actually going to speak to somebody who has been actually kind of assisting, maybe helping Diane, maybe helping the Strictly team, just to know how to help a blind person to learn to dance.
How's he getting on?
He's getting on brilliantly.
Is he? Yeah.
He's really, really good, actually, yeah. He's got incredible sort of timing and, yeah, I've only seen that one dance, but really impressed by it. And everyone absolutely loves him, obviously, because he's also a very funny man.
Yeah.
So that's coming up before 8 o'clock or 9 o'clock.
Yeah, and we'll tell you about the Conservative Party conference as well, which is beginning in Birmingham. But our top story this morning, fears of a wider war in the Middle East are growing as Iran says the death of the leader of Hezbollah will not go unavenged. The country has declared 5 days of mourning for Hassan Nasrallah after he was killed by an Israeli airstrike on the Lebanese capital Beirut.
The US President Joe Biden says his death is a measure of justice for his many victims, but called again for a ceasefire. Speaking from Beirut, our Middle East correspondent Hugo Bachega told us the latest from there.
Yesterday, the Houthis in Yemen fired another missile at Israel, and this was intercepted by the Israeli military. But this has been the fear here for almost a year, that more of these Iranian-backed groups across the region, not only Hezbollah here in Lebanon, but also the Houthis in Yemen, militias in Iraq and Syria, could join this fight against Israel. There haven't been been signs yet of a more coordinated campaign against Israel, but I think, you know, those fears remain.
Well, speaking this morning from Jerusalem, here's our BBC correspondent John Donison, who says the focus is now on what might happen next.
Hezbollah has had much of its leadership decimated, but it still has a huge military arsenal and much more sophisticated long-range guided missiles that could inflict damage all over Israel. So I think there is a question of whether Hezbollah is going to use those, is capable of using them at the moment with such a decimated leadership. And then, of course, what is Iran going to do? Iran has vowed to seek vengeance for the death of Hassan Nasrallah, but does it want to get directly involved in a confrontation with Israel, something that it has kind of resisted doing over the past year?
Well, Jane Kinnamont is the Policy and Impact Director at the European Leadership Network and an expert at the Middle East. Good morning, Jane. Hello, Jane. Can you hear us?
Hi. Hello. Hi, good morning.
Yes, you're there. Lovely. What's your reaction? I mean, what do you make of the events of the weekend so far?
The events over the weekend have really been quite seismic for the Middle East. The killing of Nasrallah has been a huge shock in many ways. It wasn't expected, especially when last week international diplomatic attention appeared to be focused on trying to negotiate a ceasefire between Israel and Hezbollah. Nasrallah is an extremely important figure, but as you've mentioned also, the rest of the military leadership of Hezbollah has also been decimated. It is a time of extreme tension. There's also a risk of rushing to judgment at the moment, because I think the implications of what has just happened will take quite a long time to really play out.
So you mentioned that personnel-wise, Hezbollah are looking thin on the ground now in terms of the military leadership, not just the man at the top. But they are still very heavily armed, aren't they? I was watching, Jeremy Bowen on BBC News last night talking about the amount of weaponry that they actually have stashed away in Lebanon.
That's right. I mean, they have a formidable arsenal and they have a lot of fighters, but they will be in some shock and disarray after the events of the last couple of weeks, starting with those pager explosions, which showed that their communications had been compromised. And all of this suggests that there had been a lot of intelligence penetration of the group as well. So that will be something that, you know, really does leave them in shock. It's quite likely that their focus for the moment will be on selecting their new leader and trying to strategize and sort of get things together. So although many are afraid of all-out war, it may be that for the moment Hezbollah doesn't have that much capacity to strike back. And Iran is also weighing its options very carefully. Iran has been signalling for months that it doesn't want a war with Israel, and it certainly doesn't want a war with the US. So there is a scenario where Iran really stays out of this. And as was mentioned by the correspondent, the pressure may instead be on the other Iran-backed groups in the region, in Iraq and Syria and Yemen, to carry out some kind of response or revenge. For the moment, that could be quite contained, but that doesn't mean that the conflict is ending or has gone away. It's still going to be there for a very long time, probably.
So you say that Iran don't want to get into an all-out conflict with Israel. I mean, what's holding them back, as it were? Because, you know, of course, they are very much backing Hezbollah.
Absolutely. But in any scenario that people have analysed for a war between Iran and Israel, Hezbollah was assumed to be the group that would really help to work for Iran and to be able to strike Israel. Iran's pretty far away from Israel. Hezbollah's right on the border. So in many ways, Iran saw Hezbollah as an insurance policy in the event of any conflict with Israel. If it's a direct conflict between two states without Hezbollah being involved, Israel is the stronger party. And Israel, of course, also has the backing of the US. And that's really been made very clear again in the last 24 hours, with the US president stating his very strong support for the killing of Nasrallah, despite the fact that just a few days before he'd been calling for a ceasefire and the administration has been claiming they didn't know anything about the planned assassination. So if Iran is looking at a conflict with Israel and the US, it just is the weaker party. It's got quite a lot of, you know, internal issues to deal with as well. So it prefers a war of attrition where it can support other groups to work against Israel rather than a direct war.
And I mean, Israel celebrating the death of Hassan Nasrallah, but what, I mean, is there any chance now of a ceasefire, which is what we've heard Joe Biden has called for again?
I mean, the chances are pretty slim, but the situation is very, very unpredictable. You know, there's also another scenario of Israel sending ground troops into southern Lebanon. I personally think that is relatively unlikely because that could be very dangerous and costly for them. But really, all bets are off at the moment. And, you know, of course, the civilians in Lebanon are bearing the brunt of this. Hundreds of people killed and thousands of people displaced. And, you know, we've seen a situation for nearly a year now with Gaza where there have been international calls for improving the humanitarian situation and having a ceasefire. Nothing has really moved. It may be that the US election will be the thing that forces an end to some of this fighting, because both Trump and Harris have made it very clear they don't want to start their presidency with a major war still going on in the Middle East. So it may be that Israel was taking this opportunity of the kind of lame duck period of the Biden administration to damage its enemies as much as it can before it comes under more American pressure to wind things up, because the US does have a lot of leverage that it has been reluctant to use so far.
Thank you so much, Jane. Jane Kinnamont, who's the Policy and Impact Director at the European Leadership Network and an expert on the Middle East. 8:16.
Matt Shawley.
BBC Radio 5 Live.
We are looking for a member of Matt's Parliament for New Forest East. Mick has got a claim. Hello, Mick.
In 1997, I proposed in a little hotel. I was actually in the bathroom.
What?
We were getting ready for dinner and I wanted it all to be sort of sorted before we went in and celebrated.
Lisa Nadi, such a safe culture major as well.
We're toughening up the system to make sure that people who are unfit owners can't become football club owners.
Matt Shawley.
Monday to Friday from 2
on BBC Radio 5 Live.
Good morning. Hope you're doing okay on this Sunday morning. It's Eleanor Oldroyd and it's Chris Warburton. And let's talk about the energy price cap. Gas and electricity prices will rise by 10% in England, Scotland and Wales. It'll happen on Tuesday. But before then, are there any ways to try and counter the increase and make the best decision for you? Let's ask Helen Dewdney, who is the Complaining Cow and Consumer Expert. Hello, Helen.
Hi.
Good morning. Right. Remind us the energy price cap. It's sometimes hard to get your head around. So just explain it again for us, if you could.
It's there by Ofgem, put it on so that companies can't charge above that cap for the unit costs. So the unit costs from the 1st of October will be 24.5p per kilowatt for electricity and 6.24p per kilowatt for gas. So it's going up 10%.
Yes. It's not a cap on what your bill might ultimately bill.
No.
Be, is no. It? No. That's how some people wrongly can perceive it. Now, there was a time when really it was really quite hard to switch at all, wasn't there? When things were absolutely sky high and to try and get some other kind of deal. Now we're seeing a lot of adverts online in particular from energy companies saying, yep, you can fix or switch. What's the advice at the moment?
At the moment, it might well depend on who you're with at the moment, because there will be some loyalty tariffs. So if you're already with a company, they might offer you a fixed tariff, whereas if you move to one, you might not. So you really need to spend some time sort of doing the research. So Outfox, the market, is offering one that's about 10% cheaper than the cap, which will save you roughly, average household, if there is such a thing, £120 a year. But there is a cancellation fee of £50 per fuel.
Yeah.
But Octopus Energy has various fixed tariffs with 7% less, but there's no fee for breaking the contract. So that's almost a win-win, really, because we're also expecting the cap to go up again in January. So it depends. I mean, British Gas had one, but they have just pulled it. So, and it is a case of making sure you do it before the 1st of October, of course.
And how long can some of these fixes be for?
They tend to be for a year or 18 months.
Right.
So
you're not committing for too long, are you? And if
if
the smart money is that it's going to keep going up anyway, then if you can get one of those, then that probably makes sense, does it not?
It certainly does at the moment. It would seem so, but you have got to sort of factor in if there's a guess out, because although it's going up in January, that does take 6 months or so of putting your heating on.
Yeah.
And so even if it does start to come down, it's unlikely that £50 sort of get out is going to be, you know, it's going to count, really.
Yeah.
So you just sort of have to do, it is going to be some guesswork, obviously, but it is predicted to go up again in January.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
If you can get that fixed tariff, it is certainly worth looking, but spend your time looking on the comparison sites and going through cashback sites.
This is it. Oh, I'm having to do the mortgage at the moment, so I'll add this to the list as well. Are there any other tricks or hacks that might work as we head into the winter to lower your energy bill?
Well, I think everyone sort of knows them all now because we've been talking about it for 2 or 3 years, but you certainly want to get your meter reading in before the 1st of October, because obviously if it's going to go up on the 1st of October, you don't want them to be estimating your bill at a different time. So certainly get that in, and also look to see if you're entitled to any help. So, you know, the winter fuel payment is going, but it's estimated that 880,000 people are still entitled to that. So check to see if you're entitled by going on a pension calculator and looking to see if you're entitled to pension credits, and therefore you will be entitled to the winter fuel payment. So you can look at the government payment calculator. And if you think you're going to fall into debt, then notify your company before you do, because you should be able to get 60 days space. You might be able to draw up a payment plan with them, and also get debt advice from Citizens Advice, Step Change and National Debt Line.
Yes, that is so important though, isn't it? Just to get ahead of the curve, as you say. If you think there's going to be problems coming down the track, then
absolutely
inform the people who you might end up owing money to. Absolutely right. Helen, thank you. Appreciate it. Helen Judney, the Complaining Cow and Consumer Expert. By the way, there's a Martin Lewis podcast, 5 Live 1, on BBC Sounds. It's available now on, I was almost on fishing, it's on fixing, on fixing or not. So if you want to hear more from Martin, there is the place to go, at BBC Sounds. Right, it's 22 minutes past 8 now.
A couple of political stories around this morning. The Kent MP, Rosie Duffield, has resigned from the Labour Party because of what she called Sir Keir Starmer's cruel policies. She told the BBC's Laura Koonsberg she was profoundly disappointed by Sir Keir.
We all had our faith in Keir Starmer and a Labour government, and I feel that voters and activists and MPs are being completely laughed at and completely taken for granted.
Well, Downing Street has not yet commented, but Cabinet Minister Pat McFadden is due to speak to Laura Koonsberg this morning on BBC One. Here's our chief political correspondent, Henry Zeffman.
I think people are getting worked up because it's an extraordinary thing to quit a political party as a member of parliament at any time, but to do so less than 3 months after a general election, after winning under the party's banner in a national election. I can't really think of any precedent for that. People do, although it's quite rare, leave parties either to be an independent, as Rosie Duffield now will, or to join another party. That's called defecting. But I can't think of an example of someone doing this so soon after a general election. On the other hand, Rosie Duffield has very publicly been uncomfortable with the Labour Party on various issues for some time now. Now, her letter actually doesn't focus on the main tension she's had with the Labour Party for years, which is over women's rights and some of the transgender debate. Actually, in the last couple of years, I think the Labour Party's position has moved much closer to where she is. But clearly in her letter, she talks about winter fuel. She talks about the recent rows over freebies and donations to Keir Starmer. So there's a broad sweep of things that she says have brought her to this point.
Well, just a reminder that the Conservative Party's annual conference starts today in Birmingham. It's mainly an event to find a new leader. We'll talk more about that before 9 o'clock. And just a reminder that Matt Chorley will present his Five Live show from the Tory Party conference next week.
Let's talk about the football. Chelsea's Cole Palmer, he made Premier League history yesterday, becoming the first ever player to score 4 goals in the first half of a match. Hit the post as well, actually. And I think there was one that went in the net that was offside.
Amazing.
Could have been even more. Unbelievable performance. Chelsea's game against Brighton finished 4-2. The 22-year-old disappointed he didn't score more.
Yeah, I just try to play every game best as I can and hopefully pull off performances like that today. Should have had 5 or 6. Yeah, we got a lot more chances and I just took the...
Yeah, Arsenal survived an almighty scare, didn't they? A pulsating contest yesterday, a worldie thrown in for good measure. Everton won a football match at last, Palace did not. And, hang on, where was the thing that I put by? So obviously the whole Pep's getting annoyed already because he's constantly being asked about Rodri, and he will constantly be asked about Rodri, won't he? And there was no De Bruyne yesterday either. Now, here we are. Here's a stat for you, Ellie. City are winless in the past 5 games they've played without Rodri and De Bruyne. When neither of them have played, they haven't won.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We say, well, you know, they've got such a big squad, City. Mm-hmm. They've got so many players to call on. But, yeah, also, interestingly, they got some quotes from Mikel Arteta as well.
Oh, yeah.
Saying
we're pals.
They are friends. He and Pep Guardiola, even though, you know, it was a bit spicy after the game last weekend, he says he loves Pep. He can't control attempts to damage their friendship. No. So it's not a feud. No. We're mates. It's okay.
No. They
started in the Barcelona Academy together.
Exactly.
As kids.
Exactly. They've known each other for years, haven't they?
Yeah, they have.
It's like you and me after a bad show. You know what I mean? If we've had a bad one, it can get a bit spiky.
Yeah, it can. Yep.
But, you know, we're pals.
We're pals. We've been doing this a long time.
Like Mikel Arteta, I've been a fan of yours since I was 10 years old.
Thanks.
Sorry. Forget it. Right, the highlight of today's Premier League action is Manchester United playing Spurs. It's the 4:30 kickoff, full match commentary on Five Live. Anna Howell is a Spurs fan. We got Kim Burdett, who supports Manchester United. Good morning, both.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. Right, Kim, first of all, we know what's going wrong, don't we? You're dominating football matches, but you're not scoring.
Yeah, pretty much the same theme that we've had for quite a long time now, to be honest.
Yeah.
Obviously, we brought Xerxes in to kind of bolster that kind of department, but we seem to be doing the same thing as we did last season, where we're creating chances. There just doesn't seem to be anyone there that can either put the ball in the back of the net, or, you know, people are just not there when the crosses are coming in. So, we're back to sort of the same position that we've been in for a little while, really.
Yeah. Whereas you've sorted it out, Anna, haven't you? I mean, it's funny how, I was saying earlier in the week, it's funny how football can change very quickly, can't it? Because people are scratching their heads going, well, you know, Tottenham looking all right, but they're not scoring. And now all of a sudden that is happening. Solanke's doing the business.
Solanke and Johnson are definitely on form, but I don't know. Maybe it's the Spurs fan in me, but I'm never going to be fully confident until it's like a long run of games that it happens.
That's fair enough, isn't it? Actually, and Sonny, fatigue, it looked like, didn't he? And if you look at it, he has created more chances from open play than any other Premier League player this season. I mean, it just shows he's such an invaluable player for you, isn't he?
I think it's very important. I think we've got a couple of these type of players like Son and Kulusevski who are really kind of going under the radar, but are really putting in an effort behind the scenes, so to speak, even though it's right under our noses. And I think they shouldn't be underestimated.
Yeah, he's now passed a century of Premier League goals for Spurs as well, hasn't he, Son Heung-min? Mm. Just going back, Kim, Christian Eriksen, after that 0-0 against FC Twente in the, is it Champions League? No, it's the... What is it?
That's the dream, the Europa.
Europa. That's it. I'm going mad. I suddenly thought to myself, they're not in the
one all.
They're not in the blinking Champions League, are they? He's Christian Eriksen.
That was just cruel, that was.
sorry. One day yeah, it'll happen again.
Let's hope so.
He said he thought FC Twente wanted it more.
I mean, it was much the same kind of performance that we had against Palace, obviously last weekend, and that we had against Brighton, where we're dominating games and just not finishing them off. And then it comes back to haunt us, because obviously that game at Brighton, we ended up losing. We couldn't find a breakthrough in the second half against Palace because they obviously stepped the game up. And exactly the same thing happened on Thursday. We dominated the first half and then just kind of took our foot off the pedal. I don't really know why, because we had no reason to take our foot off the pedal at that point and let them back into the game. So I can kind of see his point. We need to keep that sort of momentum and that drive all the way through games, because we're not finishing teams off in the first half when we have the possession and the chances, and then we just seem to let teams back in it again.
Be honest, can you think of a player that Ten Hag has improved during his time at Manchester United? Because Farrah Williams, pundit on Football Focus, was yesterday saying she can't think of a single individual.
I think there are players who have improved under Ten Hag, but I don't know whether I'd say that's a direct sort of influence from Ten Hag himself. The likes of Garnacho and Mainoo, obviously. Garnacho and Mainoo are two massive standout players that have, you know, improved immensely and done incredibly well, especially considering their age. But is that just that they are that talented?
Yeah, they weren't bad at the start, were they?
Yes.
From being very good young players, yeah.
Yeah, so I can't say that it's because of Ten Hag that they've come on, really, honestly, hand on heart.
And just a final one with you, Anna. This Archie Gray, who you've got back there in right back, 18 years old, signed from Leeds. Big Ange obviously got real faith in him, hasn't he? And he's really proving to put in some really solid performances for someone so young.
Yes, definitely. I was very impressed with him against Karabag. You know, obviously playing the game with 10 men for the majority of it. He was very solid at right back and linked up well with Johnson. And, you know, at such a young age, it's very good. If he can continue like that, then he's got a bright future.
Yeah, he certainly has. Good stuff. Thank you. Enjoy the game.
Thanks so much.
See ya. Bye. Anna Howe, Spurs fan. Kim Badett, she supports Manchester United. Sure, what have we got? It's Aston Villa. No, it's Ipswich against Aston Villa, 2 o'clock. That'll be Ali Bruce Ball and Mark Schwarzer on that one. And then at 4:30, Manchester United against Spurs, John Murray and Leon Osman. Don't forget, Colin's going to be with you from 10 o'clock as well, by the way. Breakfast goes seamlessly into Colin, so there'll be plenty of football talk on that. Jim Magilton on the programme, Pat Nevin, of course, Martin Kellner, who is always great value. Yeah.
Love Martin.
Yeah. And Justin Morehouse,
amazing
fellow Heaton Moor resident.
And fellow fighting talker as well. It's got, yeah, definitely got a sense of fighting talk around.
Yeah, that's true. That'll be a good one.
Sounds like it'll be an excellent listen. Thank you for your fishing texts as well. We're getting lots of people wanting to tell us about the joy of angling. Should we do one quickly?
I like it. Yeah,
yeah, I think it's good, actually. It's different. I don't think we've talked, you know, we've talked about most things in the last 10 years or so on this show. Yeah. I don't think we've talked about angling. Stephen from Birmingham, it's a wonderful thing. People have no idea of the preparation you have to do to be successful. Anything that brings you closer to nature is a good thing. It's dreamy, mysterious and very rewarding. Mm. Actually helped me to pass my English Lit O-Level. I still remember the questions or proposition. I wish I knew then what I know now. Proceeded to write about 4 full pages and the words just spilled out from my imagination and experience onto the page. I managed to get an A. Just the one, though, as I was too busy fishing for all the other O-level exams.
So he's saying it was that sort of peace and solitude that allowed his imagination to run wild. And that is really sort of poetic in many ways, isn't it? Simon from New Malden, there is a holistic fishing TV programme on BBC Two still on called Gone Fishing, Sunday night, 9 p.m. Angling can help rehabilitation and recovery.
Well, it's Paul Whitehouse, yeah, and Bob Morton.
Yeah, exactly.
Isn't it?
But that's as much about their friendship, isn't it? And obviously yeah, how funny they are. But you're absolutely right. And he says, please give a shout out to the two charities, Tackling Minds and the Cancer and Pisces Trust, who offer the opportunity to those people who are recovering from personal issues, cancer or addiction indeed, to enjoy letting go of their everyday issues and focus on a positive situation in a wonderful natural environment. This is the thing. You just start talking about Phil Foden, which is how we got into this, and he's talked about how much he loves fishing in a podcast or on a YouTube channel, and then all of a sudden you don't know what text you're going to get, do you? Which is always a joy.
Taking down all sorts of interesting.
Yeah,
interesting
so thank
routes.
You for those. 850-58. Let's keep that going this morning at BBC Five Live. If you want to get in touch on social media, it's 8:34. Time for the news.
The voice of the UK
and the home of the Premier League.
This is BBC Radio Five Live.
The headlines: fears of a wider war in the Middle East are growing as Iran says the death of the leader of Hezbollah will not go unavenged. The country has declared 5 days of mourning for Hassan Nasrallah after he was killed by an Israeli airstrike.
The MP Rosie Duffield has quit the Labour Party because of what she called Sir Keir Starmer's cruel policies and hypocrisy over his acceptance of gifts. She will now sit as an independent.
The Conservative Party's annual conference starts today in Birmingham. The event is a chance for the party's four leadership candidates to make an impression, with each of them due to give a speech on Wednesday.
And Oasis are due to reveal more details on Monday after a cryptic message appeared on social media. The band posted photos of billboards featuring Noel and Liam with the headline, "Be careful what you wish for." Let's get the sport. Here's James.
Good morning, all. Once again, Arsenal are level on points with Manchester City after a dramatic game at the Emirates. They are still, though, a point behind the leaders, Liverpool. The Gunners did squander a 2-0 lead against newly promoted Leicester, but Arsenal then scored twice in injury time to seal a 4-2 victory and keep pace with the league leaders in the early stages of this season. At midfielder Leandro Trossard got Arsenal second yesterday. He says that his side's mentality had seen them through to the eventual win.
After the 2-2, we reacted really well and we went to score goals. I think their goalkeeper, we need to give him credit because he made some incredible saves, I think. But we are happy that we managed to get the win and we can move on from that.
Like I say, still a point back of Liverpool, of course, after they got their fifth win of the season in the late game at Molineux, a 2-1 win for Arne Slot's side. Thankful to Mo Salah for converting from the spot for the winner. City level on points with Arsenal, a point off the pace after that lunchtime draw in Newcastle. 4 points dropped in 6 days now for Pep Guardiola's side. Dwight McNeil was the hero yesterday. He scored both goals for Everton as they came from behind to beat Crystal Palace 2-1. A first win of the season for Sean Dyche's side, and it ends a positive week for the Toffees, who look set to welcome new ownership. Dyche says he was happy to reward frustrated, to say the least, Toffee fans with a win.
You know, they've been waiting too long considering the positions we've been in to win games, but it's come again. You know, we've corrected it. We've done very well today, and that's important, but it's only one step. You know, the steps here, they last about 3 days, and then everyone's saying, why haven't you done this and why haven't you done that? That's the demand of the club.
Elsewhere, Fulham beat Nottingham Forest and Brentford drew with West Ham. Rangers will look to narrow the gap on Scottish Premiership leaders Celtic when they face Hibs at lunchtime. Their old firm rivals just keep on winning. They beat St Johnston 6-0 away from home yesterday. 9 straight wins in all competitions. Brendan Rodgers says that his side had made a statement ahead of their Champions League clash with Borussia Dortmund in midweek.
From the first whistle, I think we've seen the mentality in the team, and I felt before the game it was an opportunity for us to show that, and I don't think the players could have done any more.
Aberdeen, by the way, level on points with Celtic after they beat Dundee at Dens Park. You may have heard on Five Live last night, Fight Night with the team, Terry Harper, the new WBO World Lightweight Champion. She's beaten fellow Englishwoman Rhiannon Dixon in Sheffield, though she didn't have it all her own way.
There were some tough points in the fight, and I swear I had to remember what I were here for and dig down, and it's part of the boxing, the world title, you're going to get buzzed. So I just took the round off, recovered, and luckily I'm fit and healthy, so I managed to recover quick and get back to work.
Yeah, reignites her career. The Boxing Pod with Buncey and Co. out now for your delight and delectation. Saracens are top of this Premiership after beating Sale Sharks yesterday to make it 2 wins out of 2. 45-26 was the score. Wins 2 for Quins and Saints. Cardiff, meanwhile, they came from behind to beat Scarlets 24-15 in the United Rugby Championship. And with England due to take on Australia in their fifth and deciding one-day international later today, cricket's domestic summer is coming to a close. Just the promotion and relegation still to decide. It's Lancashire, who yesterday were officially relegated from Division 1, but coming in the other direction are their White Rose rivals, Yorkshire. Sports Extra from 11, by the way, is where you can hear that England-Australia decider get going this morning.
This is BBC Radio 5 Live.
The voice of the UK.
On digital radio.
On BBC Sounds.
And ask your smart speaker to play BBC Radio 5 Live.
Very much keeping an eye on the weather at the moment for those parts of the country that have been really saturated and flooded in many cases as well. So let's get the latest from Matt Taylor for you.
Good morning. Chilly start, gradually getting wetter and windier for some. Southwest England, Wales, Isle of Man and Northern Ireland. Seeing the thicker cloud arrive first, gales around coasts as well, 50-60 mile an hour gusts for one or two, but outbreaks of rain erratically developing through the morning, afternoon, where it could turn heavy and persistent. Across the rest of England, away from the southwest, staying largely dry for a good part of the day, best of any brighter breaks in the east, fairly cloudy for most, but rain will develop through the evening and overnight. Scotland staying dry though for most through the day, as showers clear away from Orkney and Shetland. A lot of cloud around, but some brighter breaks here and there. Temperature across the UK today, 11 to 15, but persistent rain across England tonight could cause some minor flooding. Matt Taylor, 5 Live Weather.
BBC Radio 5 Live.
The voice of the UK.
We feel totally betrayed.
Welcome to Murrayfield.
I listen to you guys all the time.
Sunday Breakfast.
With Eleanor Aldroyd and Chris Warburton.
And good morning. Great to have your company. It's 20 minutes to nine already. And the Conservative Party's annual conference starts today in Birmingham. Mainly an event to really find their new leader. Our political correspondent, Hannah Miller, is there.
This is going to be a pretty unusual conference because it is basically a giant hustings for the four of them. There are banners inside the conference centre with all the candidates' faces on them. I'm sitting here with a giant Robert Jenrick head to my left-hand side. So let's start with him. He is the candidate who's got the most MPs publicly backing him at the moment. And then we have Kemi Badenoch. She's a close second with MPs, a pretty strong contender, thought to be the favourite among the party's members who will get the final say. There's James Cleverly, the former Home Secretary, and also Tom Tugendhat, who's widely regarded as being kind of the most centre-ground of the candidates. All of them doing lots of events over the next few days, speeches, Q&A sessions. I'm sure there'll be a few conversations behind closed doors as well.
Let's have a word with Henry Hill. Henry's deputy editor of Con Home and is heading to Birmingham for the party conference. Morning, Henry.
Good morning.
Good morning. Will the new leader be clear by the end of the conference, do you think? Will we know who it's likely to be?
Well, no. Mechanically, no. What happens now is we have the conference, then the week after that, the MPs have another two rounds of voting to winnow the field of four down to the final two. Mm. And then the membership voting takes place over October. But I suppose it might be possible that the one or the other of the candidates manages to do something to clarify their position in the race. Mm. Currently, there's essentially two races going on. There's Kemi Badenoch and Robert Jenrick competing to be the more right-wing candidates in the final two. Mm-hmm. And there's Tom Tugendhat and James Cleverly competing to be the more One Nation candidate.
Yes. How much could it be down to this speech? They all give a 20-minute speech on Wednesday, I think, don't they? And in the past, I think, you know, that's been an opportunity for an outsider to really wow the crowd, in a sense, hasn't it? I think that happened with David Cameron all those years ago, did it not?
Yes, it did. David Cameron's advantage, though, is that he was such an outsider in 2005. You know, he'd only entered Parliament in the 2001 general election. He hadn't been had long, at any rate, in the shadow cabinet. So it's easier for someone in that position to transform their place in the contest than it is for four people who, in one form or another, were all in the government. But yes, there is an opportunity for somebody to prove themselves. Tom Tugendhat and James Cleverly, one or the other of them, could have a very good weekend. Currently, they're level pegging, and that might help MPs on that wing of the party decide which of them is effectively going to make it through into the final round with the membership vote. And Kemi Badenoch, she's polling very well in the final round head-to-heads, both in our survey and with YouGov and so on. Mm. But currently, it's not obvious that she's going to reach the final round.
Oh,
because
right.
there's more than enough One Nation MPs to put one of them over the top, and Robert Jenrick is ahead
yeah.
on the right. So her mission will be to try and find that MP support to overtake Robert Jenrick.
Interesting. What's your assessment of the contest, Henry? Because Laura Kunzberg, her programme will be starting shortly on BBC One. She quotes in a piece on the BBC News website a senior Conservative describing the contest so far as ponderous and lacklustre. What say you?
Yeah, the challenge is the party decided to have a very long contest running all the way until the end of next month, partly in order to have it overrunning conference so that the Tory members could meet the four candidates. But at the same time, it's been trying really hard to avoid anybody going negative, to avoid the spectacle in 2022 of Rishi Sunak and Liz Truss tearing lumps out of each other for weeks on end. But while that makes perfect sense from the party's perspective, it does mean it's been a long contest in which not an awful lot has happened. And if you look at the public opinion polling or the Conservative Party member opinion polling in the first 5 or 6 weeks of the contest, when the candidates weren't criticizing each other very much, they didn't really move. And the downside of that is that, you know, outside the Conservative Party, this has been a pretty crucial period for this government. There have been lots of areas in which the party could and should have been taking the fight to Labour.
Yes.
But whilst Jeremy Hunt managed to do that fairly effectively at times, the current front bench is a series of placeholders. And that's made it more difficult.
So do you think they'll be kicking themselves a bit? Because you wonder whether a new leader being in place sooner could have helped the Conservatives make more political capital. That's essentially what you're saying through some of these struggles, whether it's the free breeze, you know, Sue Gray's pay, winter fuel allowance, etc.
Yeah, and but the really, really big one is the budget. This budget could end up defining this parliament, perhaps this Labour government. You know, Labour have already lost the polling lead they had after the general election. They've burned a lot of political goodwill on quite small things or trivial stories. And now we're in the run-up to what the Chancellor is indicating is going to be an extremely painful budget. We've already had the cuts to the winter fuel allowance. There is probably much more to come. Now, having a new leader in place with their feet under the desk in time for that budget would have meant that that would be the starting gun on their leadership, and it would give them a chance to set the tone for the next 5 years. Instead, that task is going to fall, the task of taking on that budget is going to fall to Jeremy Hunt and the previous leadership. Now, of course, Hunt was Chancellor, so that does give him some advantages, but he's also very much, at least in this role, yesterday's man and on the way out. And I think that could be something the party comes to regret.
Are you impressed that I resisted asking you what the mood will be like at the conference, Henry, which is obviously the question that is always asked.
Yes. You were getting a lot of credit.
Thank you very much indeed. Enjoy. Anyway, thank you. Henry Hill, who's deputy editor of Con Home, and he will be there. We will be there, of course, Five Live. We'll have our correspondence there, but Five Live's Matt Chorley will present his show from Birmingham and the Conservative Party conference next week. Really been enjoying Matt's programme in the afternoons, 1 till 4, and he will be there following every little bit of the leadership contest. Right, it's 8:46.
I have more diamonds than the Queen of England.
Welcome to the world of thieves and hoaxers and con women.
She does sound fabulous, though.
Massive dogs, lots of cars.
But who are these lady swindlers? And did they get away with their frauds and deceptions by using their feminine characteristics?
I am the notorious Tilly Devine.
She's a bit of a one-off, really.
Lady Swindlers with Lucy Worsley.
Where true crime meets history.
Listen first on BBC Sounds.
I said Matt's show is 1 till 4. It's not. It's 2 till 4. That's all that's.
Oh, right. Yes, it is very good, though. I absolutely endorse your recommendation of it.
Thank you. Good.
It's 8:47. Yes, it's the second week of Strictly. The first elimination will happen later on this evening. But a lot of attention on Chris McCausland. He might be more comfortable landing punchlines than pasodobles, but he has already impressed the judges as a contestant on Strictly. Chris is registered blind. But last night, he and Diane Boswell scored 29 points with their slow foxtrot, and it earned them a standing ovation.
Everyone in this room is on their feet right now. Everyone's on their feet.
I think you're a popular man.
It's a lot, isn't it? It's just... it's quite overwhelming, isn't it?
And this reaction from the judges.
Slow Fox is one of the most difficult ballroom dances you could get, and you made that look so easy.
I've never heard the word frame so much in my life than this one.
Week two, you are an example to every celebrity that's upstairs when it comes to footwork.
The three-step, I haven't seen a three-step like that since I did it.
Your fingers bothered me.
Oh!
My fingers. They were splayed like bananas on her back, and I'm sure you would have been told about that, but obviously didn't take any notice. But you know what? I love your spirit in that dance, and your musicality is beyond. It's great.
Thank you.
So what goes into creating the best environment for Chris on the dance floor? Sandrine Monard is the artistic director of Unbound Dance Theatre Company and has been working with Strictly over the past month. Sandrine, good morning.
Good morning.
Tell us a bit about the work that you do.
So I'm the artistic director of Unbound Dance Theatre, and we are a dance company whose focus is on making dance more accessible for blind and visually impaired people.
So what kind of work have you been doing with the team at Strictly?
So I worked pretty much ahead of the show. So I have worked with Diane online and in person to kind of support her on how she was going to approach her work with Chris. And then I've worked with all the different departments, running sensitivity training, so giving them an idea of what is it, what does it mean to live with a visual impairment in life and in a dance context.
So what kind of things were you telling Diane that she should be watching out for in teaching Chris? Because clearly, you know, he can't see what she's doing. So I suppose just that verbal communication is so important.
So the first thing when I started working with Diane, it was like, because I was not working with Chris at the same time, I was like, I can't give you all the answers because every sight loss is completely different, completely unique. So she was going to have to really adapt to who Chris was, to how he was learning, how he was working. So that was the first thing to kind of understand. And then in terms of dance, there's a lot of different tools that you can come in, but it's, yeah, how to verbalize the movements. And sometimes at first you think about kind of being very descriptive, but sometimes you have to come into more metaphoric, more poetical, and finding kind of relatable way of describing movements through everyday life.
Yeah, so give us kind of an example of that. I'm trying to picture how that would work.
So I think something that we actually talked about, for example, making a big circle in the space with your arm, you would like draw a big circle or paint a big circle with your fingertips. If there was like a big movement forward with big intention, like throw a bowling ball forward. So it's finding all those points of reference that could be easier understood, not within like the dance jargon or dance words, but really everyday activities.
Yeah. Let's bring in Sean Hayward, who is a dancer who has the same sight loss condition as Chris. Good morning, Sean.
Hi, guys. You all right?
Yeah, good, thank you. What have you made of Chris's performance so far from what you're hearing and what people are telling you?
It's just great to see that he's actually now starting to fall in love with it. Because at first I thought he's just making a joke of this. It's not what I do, you know, but it's really great to see that he's starting to do that, because then, you know, as he learns more, he really will, you know, learn to understand the liberty that dance gives to someone with sight loss.
Mm. How did you learn to dance? And I don't know when your condition set in, or whether you had some sight to start with. Is it something that's always been part of your life?
I come from a family of boppers, you know, teen discos, whatever, you know, they were all up there, you know, but I'm a musician, but my timing in my body was just awful. And it was in 2010 that I first went to a modern jive and salsa classes. And I always recommend modern jive to anybody that's starting out with a disability or with social anxiety or anything, because it's easy to learn. So I did that for 2 or 3 years. But then I was plagued with leg injuries and different things, and I never thought I'd dance again. And in 2022, I went to the Jane Jarvis Dance Studio here in Manchester and just started ballroom. And within the second week, Jane just punched me in the chest and says, "You need to compete." I was like, what?
Wow. And, so you took up competition and you've won quite a few accolades, haven't you?
Yeah. I started in January. And in the November, we went to Withershaw and I did the qualifiers for Blackpool. And yeah, in the April of Blackpool, I was on the dance floor at the Winter Gardens and I got third in the UK.
Amazing.
And it was quite a hard time because I was actually on residential training with my new guide dog, Kevin. So I didn't get to practice, but we just went, you know what, let's just throw it all in, did it. And oh, it was a ball, man.
And what about your partner?
What, Kevin, my guide dog?
Sorry. Do you have a dance partner? I'm kind of thinking about the partnership between Chris and Diane.
I mainly dance with Jane, the teacher. But once I've got, because like I say, with modern giant things like that, you just have a series of moves. You can dance with anybody. You know what you're doing. Whereas it's all sort of routines. So once I've learnt a routine, then I'll say to Jane, right, I'll dance with the other ladies. Because it's great for me to, you know, dance with girls of different heights and everything, just to get used to different feeling, how I'm going to lead.
Yeah. Let me go back to Sandrine. I mean, Sandrine, how impressed have you been so far with Chris? And how about that partnership between him and Diane? They seem to have created something quite special already.
I've been really impressed. It's similar. I've loved seeing how he's just throwing himself into it and then slowly finding the freedom and the love of it. And I think that partnership with Diane probably has a lot of reason there. It's all about when you start working with someone, it's all about building the trust at first, how to really learn to just trust that the person is going to guide you, is going to be there for you, is going to be your eyes for you. And I think they really found a lovely partnership together.
Yeah, it is really special. It's great to talk to you both. Thank you very much indeed, Sandrine Monard, who's the Artistic Director of the Unbound Dance Theatre Company. And we also talked to Sean Hayward, who is a dancer in Manchester, as you say, Greater Manchester, very successful as well. And he has the same condition, sight loss condition, as Chris McCausland does. It's just coming up to 9:05 now.
Now, it was dubbed the cursed world title after facing cancellation after cancellation. But last night, Terry Harper was the one celebrating. She beat Rhiannon Dixon. We were talking about this on the programme yesterday morning, looking ahead to the fight. It was to take her WBO lightweight belt in Sheffield live on 5 Live last night.
All three for your winner by unanimous decision. And the new WBO lightweight champion of the world, Terry Belter-Harper!
And now they celebrate. Now she's embraced. Now she's in tears. Now she can celebrate. Now she can let people know. That's more her style. Rhiannon Dixon bowed her head, a little wry smile. The right woman won tonight. Let's get it right. But both of them, no, they've been in a fight.
Well, that was Steve Bunce, obviously. Our former boxer and commentator Stacey Copeland was with Bunce ringside. Morning, Stacey.
Morning.
I mean, this was a very strong performance, wasn't it, by Harper? And just put into context, when we talk about someone becoming a three-weight champion, just tell us what that takes and what that means in boxing.
Well, she's jumped up quite a few levels, really. I mean, she boxed at lightweight last night. She's around 135 pounds, but she's gone all the way up to over 150, which is, you know, a significant jump. Mm. But obviously, that's where the opportunities were. Now, that said, not every fighter will be able to do that. It won't suit every fighter. But Terry Harper just has that kind of, she's just that kind of physical build that she seems to be able to move up and down them. However, she did say that, you know, the last couple of times out, the girls at that weight were too big. She felt very comfortable at this week, and last night proved that. It was an excellent performance from her.
Yeah. Steve was telling us on the programme yesterday about Rhiannon Dixon's amazing kind of story from, what was it, working in a pharmacy?
I mean, they've both got amazing stories.
They have,
stories.
Haven't
I mean,
they? Have.
Rhiannon was a full-time pharmacist through COVID, which was, I can't imagine how demanding that must have been. But then Terry Harper, you know, was building her sort of pathway back to boxing after a few years out working in a chip shop. So both of them, you know, really had to put the work in to get to where they are. And then, you know, Rhiannon Dixon was defending a world title last night. Terry Harper fighting for a third world title at three different weights. So it just proves, you know, what can be possible. It's incredible.
Absolutely, 100%. And it was the first pro defeat, wasn't it, for Rhiannon Dixon last night. And I think, just from reading the reports, she was sort of quite a frustrated figure at times, I think, last night, was she not?
We've got to remember as well, she didn't have any amateur background. She came through the white collar route, so she doesn't have that foundation, which I know she feels is a point to prove there, but it's absolutely not the case, given that this was only her 11th fight last night, which is incredible, and she's improved massively under the tutelage of former world champion Anthony Crawler, who's done a fantastic job with her. And last night was just a matter of a golfing experience, and sometimes you just can't bridge that gap. And it's something you're going to have to face as a sports person, is losing. It asks real questions of you deep inside. It can start to fester that doubt. And I mean, as good as I thought I was, can I achieve what I thought I could? And you go in with that belief of anything's possible, I can win, which you have to go in with that mentality. But sometimes everything you try, you can throw the kitchen sink at them. And if they have the answer to it because of that experience, because they just get it right on the night, it can be heartbreaking. It's part of sport. How you come back from it, just like in life, is what matters.
Lovely stuff. Stacey, thanks very much indeed. Great talking to you.
You too. Thanks, Chris.
All right. Cheers. Former boxer and commentator, of course, Stacey Copeland, who was there ringside. Talking of Anthony Crawler, do you remember? Former
million
world champion.
Crawler.
Well, that's the thing. There was a point when I kept on interviewing him. I can't remember. Yes. I went to his house. I went to another place where he was sparring. And $1 million Crawler. And I said to him, $1 million, it's not, in boxing terms, it's not that much these days, is it? I said, you should be $1 billion Crawler. But I mean, this was towards the end of the career, and I think it was too late by that point.
Yeah. Very nice guy, though.
He's a lovely bloke. You know. I was Five Lives Crawlerspondent, as we put it. That was it, wasn't it?
Thank you for your fishing text.
Oh, yeah.
We're going to keep this going, actually, because it's turned into quite a good thing.
It has.
And yeah, Five Live had Dirty Tackle was one fishing show, and also Fish on Five, presented by Nick Hancock.
Oh, that was
as
that.
You suggested.
I knew he did one. Okay. Yeah.
The voice of the UK.
And the home of the Premier League.
This is BBC Radio 5 Live.
And here are the headlines at 9 o'clock. Israel has struck dozens of Hezbollah targets in Lebanon over the last few hours after killing the group's longtime leader, Hassan Nasrallah. Lebanon's health ministry says 33 people were killed and nearly 200 wounded in yesterday's strikes. Jim Muir was the BBC's Middle East correspondent and now lives in Beirut.
So far, although the fact that so many of their leaders have been wiped out in the last couple of weeks, they're still firing rockets into Israel now, albeit at a somewhat reduced rate. But they do seem to have a flexible leadership system that allows understudies, as it were, to step in the moment somebody's killed. And, they almost expect to be killed.
Well, Jane Kinnamont is from the European Leadership Network, and she's an expert on the Middle East.
Although many are afraid of all-out war, it may be that for the moment, Hezbollah doesn't have that much capacity to strike back. And Iran is also weighing its options. Iran has been signalling for months that it doesn't want a war with Israel, and it certainly doesn't want a war with the US. So there is a scenario where Iran really stays out of this.
The MP Rosie Duffield has quit the Labour Party because of what she's called Keir Starmer's cruel policies and hypocrisy over his acceptance of gifts. She will now sit as an independent. Downing Street hasn't commented. Here's our chief political correspondent, Henry Zeffman.
I can't think of an example of someone quitting a party so soon after a general election. It's less than 3 months. So I expect there'll be some calls for her to stand down and fight her seat in a by-election as an independent. I don't believe she will do that. And that means that she will be there in Parliament as an independent MP, probably for upwards of 4 years, setting out her own views now as an independent MP.
The Conservatives are gathering in Birmingham for their annual conference. The four contenders for the party leadership will each get a chance to make their pitch before Tory MPs decide which two will make it through to the final ballot.
Three people have been charged with murdering a man who was stabbed in Norwich last week. The body of Calvin Taylor, who was 19, was found in a flat last Saturday.
And SpaceX has launched its mission to bring back two astronauts stranded on the International Space Station since June. The Dragon capsule, which has two empty seats for Butch Wilmore and Suni Williams, lifted off from Cape Canaveral in...